The following podcast is scheduled for one fall. One fall!
It's almost time for a new chapter of Geek Catch-Up to start. But before it does, Chris and I wanted to take a moment to send our love and appreciation out to all of you for choosing to hang out with us. If you enjoy Geek Catch-Up, then make sure to slam that subscribe button and help us level up the show by leaving a review on your favorite podcast platform.
You can also find us on social media to get updates on all things GK, interact directly with us, and content from the world of geekery. Geek Ketchup Podcast on Facebook and YouTube, at Geek Ketchup Pod on Instagram and Twitter, links to all of which can be found in the show notes below and on our website, geekketchuppodcast.com.
If you'd like to support the shoe, there's even links to our Square shop where you can find official GK merchandise like shirts and stickers. And Patreon, if extra content is your thing. Above all, though, the absolute best thing you can do is spread the love for the world of geekery by sharing the Geek Catch-Up podcast with your friends and family.
Now get ready to enjoy today's show, and as always, remember to stay saucy.
If it's nerdy, we're into it.
Gaming, movies, television, wrestling, comics, whatever. We are Kyle Eckert and Chris Heck, two lifelong friends with a passion for the world of geekery.
And this is the Geek Catch-Up Podcast.
What's good, Geek Catch-Up family? Welcome to another Wrestling Recap, a series where we break down the action from the latest pay-per-view from the world of professional wrestling. I'm Kyle Eckert.
And I'm Chris Heck.
And today we're chatting about AEW Full Gear 2021. AEW is at the Target Center in Minneapolis, Minnesota for this 10-match event, with long-term feuds finally boiling over, and with reputation and belts on the line, we couldn't break this one down alone, so making their Geek Ketchup podcast debut, welcome Anthony Garcia. What's up, Anthony? Thanks for joining us.
Woo! Hey, guys, how you doing? I had to throw that in there. I had to.
The mini-woo.
Mini-woo. It would make sense that the very first audible noise you make on our podcast is a good old Dirty Robes woo.
It has been a long time coming, and then, not to get ahead, but the Lethal debut last night, it was perfect timing.
It's true. As Anthony alluded to, there was a huge debut last night. He didn't go in-ring, but we'll get to it as the pay-per-view goes on, and I've heard through the grapevine that you are a big Jay Lethal fan.
I am. It's just one of those guys that he's so entertaining. When he's on the TV, I want the mic in his hand and I want to hear him. So it's one of those things where if you haven't seen it, you'll get it when you get it. And he's really good in the ring. He's had some really classic matches with a lot of people. And I was just always somebody that was kind of like AJ Styles. And then he made it to WWE finally. And I was excited when he made it. I feel like Jay Lethal was another one of those guys that could have easily been put into that kind of spot, but he's had his own path, but I'm excited to see what he's going to do in AEW for sure.
Yeah, for sure. It sounds like you have a long history with wrestling. Give us a brief rundown of when you got into it and maybe favorite wrestler of all time.
Oh, the second one's so hard, but yeah, I've been watching ever since I was a kid. I think I'm a year or two older than Chris, so since the early 80s I've been watching. I had, you know, the older cousins that were really into it, and you know, right around the same time frame that I started watching wrestling, I'm really into Ninja Turtles and G.I. Joes and action figures and things like that. And one of my older cousins, he was like, in the early days, recording stuff on VHS and collecting figures and stuff like that, and the Wrestling Buddies and all these things. And I was like, wow, you're so cool. Like, I want to, you know. And so my parents didn't really want me watching wrestling, but it was just one of those things that was like, I'm going to watch it. It's going to get watched. There's just no way around it. And I would know when I'd go to my cousin's house, he had his closet and he just had VHS tapes stacked to the top. And just like every Nitro, like everything, I was like, wow, like you're super hardcore. I wasn't that hardcore, but I did pick up that habit of recording one so I could watch the other. I was like, really?
Okay.
Yeah. So like my big Christmas present one time was getting the VHS, the VCR that I could record one channel and watch the other.
Nice.
So all through the Monday Night Wars and everything, like I'm watching one, I'm flipping, but I'm recording just in case I miss something.
Right.
And so that was kind of how I spent my teenage years, and then doing backyard wrestling with my friends. We had a website and everything that we did our storylines and stuff with. So yeah, it was like a pretty big part of my youth growing up for sure. Favorite wrestler. I feel like it still changes even when we're talking about the 90s.
Yeah, that's fair. That's fair.
You know, The Rock and Stone Cold are definitely as a top there. And then Ric Flair, of course, which you guys know about. And, you know, a lot of his prime was before my time, but some of that is from what I did see. Some of that is the reverence I hear other wrestlers talk about him. And I'm just like, if that guy likes that guy, like, I have to give that guy respect.
Sure.
And he's just so entertaining. I'm such a fan of promos and people going crazy and berserk on the mic. And he is like Mr. Berserk on the mic. So that's somebody time and time again, I will go down a YouTube hole any day of the week and just watch Ric Flair go off. So those three are probably my favorites for sure.
I'll throw it out there too, because Kyle, you and I, of course, we've always said that we were primarily WWF guys at the time, you know, during the Monday Night Wars. What I've always liked about talking with Anthony is that Anthony was more of a WCW guy, right, first and foremost.
Okay.
Yeah.
And so he's got a little bit more of that perspective, whereas, you know, we were more focused on what was going on in WWE. Kind of the same thing, bouncing back and forth a little bit, keeping tabs on both, but as a primary, right, we were on either side of the Monday Night Wars, you know, as far as who we may have been rooting for to win or something like that. But it always gives good perspective. I always appreciate talking to Anthony about wrestling because he fills in some gaps that I may have here and there.
Yeah, that's one of the things that drew me into AEW right away. The production quality of it and the presentation just reminds me of TNT in 1996. And it just was, I don't know, it was just something that I really liked. It had a different feeling of real, if that makes sense. Like the way that the cameras look, the way it's presented on TV, the way that the promos were, they did have characters, but, you know, it was a little more first and last name type wrestlers and stuff like that.
Yeah. Instead of Doink.
Yeah. Instead of Doink and stuff like that, you know, it just felt different, yeah. But I loved them both. I loved them both.
Totally fair. Yeah, and it's true. Like, the WWE has gone down the route of sports entertainment, where, you know, it's glitz and glam. And I would say AEW still gives you that grit of professional wrestling.
Yeah.
I mean, I was definitely eating up Mankind and all that stuff, too. Like,
yeah.
Socko, all those things. You know, like, don't get me wrong. But, yeah, I would try to watch Nitro Live, and I would record USA when I could, or right after, or the next day on tape.
Awesome, awesome. Well, we're glad to have you here to break down this pay-per-view with us. I think we can go ahead and get right into the action of that pre-show, which kicked off at that 7:30 before the official 8 o'clock pay-per-view. It is on YouTube. It's that buy-in that AEW calls it. It saw Nyla Rose and Jamie Hayter going up against Hikaru Ishida and Thunder Rosa, and there wasn't much to talk about here. I mean, it was your solid preview match. It wasn't a barn burner, but it did get the crowd going, and it was a nice little classic face v heel team-up situation, as we saw a crossover with the current AEW TBS Championship Tournament, since in the next round of that tournament, we'll see Nyla take on Sheeta and Rosa take on Hayter. So it was no surprise winner here, as the end saw Sheeta get the final pin over Rose. So the face looked strong and tall. But I think the bigger question here, fellas, is who do you see winning that TBS tournament? We'll ship it over to Chris here first.
Seeing who's going to win the tournament, if I had to pick from these four, it's going to be Thunder Rosa all day long. You know, Nyla and Hikaru have both been AEW women's champ already. Thunder Rosa's newer to the roster, but she's also got a great fan base behind her. She's got a lot of momentum. I actually thought that she was going to go and maybe feud with Britt Baker for the AEW championship there when she came in. That didn't happen. So if I were to pick right now, I think I would go with Thunder Rosa.
Yeah, I would agree. I am a Thunder Rosa fan. And I, you know, she's put in a lot of years, actually, more than what we think when you kind of look into her background and stuff. But that's somebody that people want to see on TV. So if you're going to have a new TV champ, I think that's probably the right move right there. Get the belt on somebody that looks like that's what we want to see on TV wrestling every week. So obviously, though, the other wrestlers have really good talent. Nyla Rose definitely could hold that belt, has held the other belt in the past, and she's a dominant wrestler, and people really love them some Shida too, but I would go with Thunder Rosa.
Solid choices. The other quarterfinal matchups of that tournament is Jade Cargill taking on Red Velvet and Chris Statlander taking on Ruby Soho. I think out of that one, I would say either Jade or Ruby have a solid chance of moving on, but I would agree with both of you there. Rosa, probably the inevitable champ.
Yeah, and I mean, this match I thought was all in all a pretty good tag match. One thing I really just wanted to call out is I do like what AEW is doing right now with this tournament to help create some more intersections, create some more feuds between the undercard with the women. Because, you know, for a while it's been just those folks at the top, whoever's at top. It's been, you know, 4 or 5 women since they've started the company. And now it is starting to feel like there's a little bit more to get invested in, a little bit more to follow between some of the undercard or mid-card talent. And I'm really just hoping that we see that elevation continue, whether it's Rosa, Cargill, you know, any of them right now. It just needs that lift. And I think they're starting to get there.
Yep. I would agree. I'd agree. We'll double back on the women's division a little later in the card, as we will see Britt Baker take on Ty Conti for the women's championship. But let's kick off the main card and the opening match of the night. So Darby Allin taking on MJF. MJF coming to the ring in what looked like a super comfy robe. Nice purple, flat, like just kind of flowed real nice, fuzzy with the Burberry trim, of course. He always looks so good. But he was one-upped by Darby's cinematic entrance, which I thought was kind of wild. They gave him the full, the car crash, retelling the story with his uncle. And then when he finally does make his way to the ring, he enters with the man Sting.
It had amazing face paint. Like, maybe his best face paint to date for Darby with that. It almost looked like an x-ray of his
Yeah,
skull.
Oh yeah. Had a little more blue to it than usual.
Yeah.
Anthony, any thoughts on Sting? I know you're being a big WCW guy.
Wow, thoughts on Sting. Where to begin? I mean...
With his partnership with Darby, with Darby.
Yeah, yeah, okay. We'll skip 30 years and go to right now. I was literally going to start at the beginning, so good job getting me back on track.
It all started in a gym in Venice Beach in 1989.
That is totally where I was going to go, dude. I like this partnership. I like seeing Sting on TV. I did wonder what he was going to do in this match. I wasn't sure if he was needed to come out there or not in the beginning, but I guess to let us know, like, he's in the building.
Yeah.
And I don't mind seeing Sting any day of the week. So, but I like seeing them paired together. And Sting, hey man, that guy can still throw his jabs. He can still do his little chop things that he does. Like, he can move. So if he can, he's doing what he's doing right now, I'm totally good with it.
Fair enough. Fair enough. Looking good for a man well into his 60s.
Right? Yeah. He's managed to survive the wrestling career better than most. You know, if you think about like him compared to Undertaker or something like that, you know, wrestling roughly the same amount of time.
Yeah.
He definitely seems to be in much better physical shape. Yeah, and I told Anthony last night when we were watching this that Sting still looks like 1990 Steve Borden.
Yeah.
Like he really hasn't even aged that much, like just visibly. So that's a
tangent. Face paint and the right attire helps.
Yeah, for sure.
But we'll get into the match itself, as this one started off surprisingly technical. Then again, MJF said that his technical ability would be the difference in this match, that Darby Allin was just a spot guy. He couldn't get on the mat and do it. But I will say Allin went hold for hold with him in the early going until finally MJF took control. He did it via sucker punch, that dastardly heel he is. And he began wearing Allin down. And it was actually during this grind period that MJF tweaked his knee, which would go on to impact all future moves, both taken and delivered on his end. It also opened the door for Allin to start getting a little bit of his own offense. It was a slow build, that technical slow build. Then they started to pick up the pace, running the ropes, and had a great series of arm drags and more. And we saw MJF biting Allen's face, then trying to go for a superplex. Allin then escaped with a bite of his own and did a flip over stunner off the top rope. That was pretty remarkable. We also saw a Tombstone Piledriver on the ring apron. All kind of wild. So for a slow build, this one quickly picked up and then really got the crowd invested. And I didn't know if you two had a particular spot that you enjoyed, the back and forth all around. I thought this one was a masterclass. So I'll send it over to Anthony here first. As far as the MJF Allen feud and this match in particular, which spots stood out to you?
Yeah, well, I think you explained that match perfectly. I really, really enjoyed that match from the beginning all the way to the end. One of my favorite spots that I was raving about the whole rest of the night was the powerbomb backbreaker that MJF delivered to Darby Allin. I've never seen that before, and there's probably not a lot of guys that you could do that move to, but that was like spectacular. I've never seen that before. I may or may not have seen a tombstone on the apron, and that's this theme through the night that there was stuff that I'd never seen before all throughout, but that one in particular. And I don't want to undersell how sick that coffin drop was from the top rope to the outside, like not a table, not anything to kind of, that is straight all the way to the ground. That was sick. I like that a lot. That was dangerous and successful.
Oh yeah.
I appreciated every single bit of this match.
Well, as in most wrestling recaps, Taylor is sitting next to me when I'm watching these pay-per-views. And if something crazy happens, I'll like tap her on the leg and be like, hey, watch this replay, watch this replay. And she watched the replay for that one and she just kind of went, yeah, it was a long fall. I'm like, I don't think you realize how long of a fall that was. Like, because yeah, if you think the elevation of the ring plus the ring posts, 10 feet plus.
Yeah. Calling that a trust fall is such an understatement. I don't know how you could. I don't know how you can fall like that and just let it go. I mean, that guy's crazy, man.
Yeah, it's like dead weight.
Yeah.
The whole match, though, the slow build was so perfect. And then, yeah, the hold for holds got a little bit stronger, a little bit more physical. The power moves got a little bit more vicious. You know, tried a sneaky thing here, a sneaky thing there until finally got one that stuck and got the win. That was such an awesome match. It set the bar so high for the rest of the night.
For sure. And we'll shift it over to Chris. We did nail a few of the highlight moments, so hopefully we didn't take them all away from you. But anything that really stuck out to you?
Oh, my absolute favorite moment of this match was before it started. And that was when Justin Roberts announced MJF as the man who will beat Darby Allin with a headlock takeover. And that was just so amazing for the storyline, because then as the match started, MJF hits Darby with like four headlock takeovers in a row. And I was like popping of like, beat him now, just get it, you know? And so I just love that little piece. Like, MJF's just this master of these little tidbits, and then he kind of always pulls them together. But I did think it worked through and through. I actually kind of want a 2.0. I was thinking about this morning, kind of reflecting back. And one thing, because Anthony and I were watching the pay-per-view together, that we said during it was, even in those early moments where they were doing a lot of the counters and the back and forth and the technical stuff, they were very clean about it, but it felt like it was in slow motion. Like, it almost felt like it was in practice mode still, and maybe that was because they haven't wrestled a lot together, or who knows what it might be. But I almost was thinking that, like, if we got a 2.0 where they were working some of the same stuff, like maybe it would have been a little bit smoother, a little bit better pacing. Not the end of the world, because MJF wrestles like he's, you know, Hulk Hogan in the 80s sometimes, but it just had a different feel to it, because a lot of, you know, when you see those types of moves, it's like with luchas and they're just running, you know, 100 miles an hour. So, but all in all, I really did like that. With the power bomb, I just have to call out, it was really funny, because when that power bomb happened into the backbreaker, JR just goes, that was nasty. Like, even he reacted to that move being kind of unique and powerful. So all in all, very entertaining match. Even down to like what they were making the ref do. I don't know if you caught that, but like in some of the counters, like they were making the ref count one-handed, they were making the ref count two-handed on both of them, and like they were putting Bryce Remsburg through the paces there. So a little shout out to him as well.
Yeah, for sure.
But it worked beginning to end, I thought.
Yeah, for sure, for sure. And as we work into that ending, Chris alluded to it, MJF said he was going to win via headlock takedown, and he eventually got there. But before that happened, we did see Wardlow and Sean Spears come down for the interference. But Anthony, your man Sting came from behind with the baseball bat and protected his boy Darby. So I guess we established Sting in the beginning just so we could bring him back and he could hit somebody with a baseball bat.
Keep doing it. Get him out there and let him hit people with baseball bats. I will do this with my hands, with my money.
Yeah.
Just give it up.
Just take it all. Take it all. But MJF, during all of the distractions, MJF actually went and grabbed Darby's skateboard, brought it back into the ring, handed it to him, and was begging him to hit him right in front of the ref. He wanted the DQ win, but Darby wouldn't do it. He asked the ref to remove the skateboard from the ring. And then, of course, with the ref's back turned, MJF pulls the Dynamite Diamond ring out from his trunks, clocks Darby Allin right in the face, gets him nice and woozy so he can use that side headlock takedown and get the pin. He did exactly what he said he was going to do. And we move on from here. Where do you think, Chris, you said you wanted a 2.0. Anthony, would you like to see a 2.0 of this match, or would you rather see these guys move in new feuds?
No, keep it going. I'd like to see a couple rematches here. I definitely want to see this. This was a wrestling match, as Darby Allin put it. And, you know, I think the pace helped with highlighting how fast and furious Darby Allin can be. I'd like to see them take that approach in the next match, which is kind of what Chris was alluding to. Let's see it play in at his speed and see how that comes out.
Nice. Yeah. And then we could have a payoff. I'm here for it. But definitely an amazing start to the pay-per-view. It just was so well done. We'll move on to the second match of the night, which was the AEW Tag Team Championship. Champions, the Lucha Bros, taking on FTR. And FTR coming out rocking the full 80s music, Rocky-styled attire, and their kind of, you know, prize fighter robes. Tully Blanchard's there. I thought his suit looked awesome.
Yeah.
It was just the beginning of the night, just the entrances all around, the attire, the vibe, the music. It was all so well done. Because, of course, the Lucha Bros had to follow it up with a great entrance of their own. They already have so many good ones, and this was just another knock in the belt for having an amazing entrance to a pay-per-view.
I'm going to totally disagree with you there. I thought that the Lucha Bros entrance made zero sense.
Really?
Yeah. We actually commented on it last night because, like, they came out, there was, like, the soldiers. They kind of looked like the Jabberwockies. I was expecting a dance routine.
Oh.
But then all of a sudden, if you watch the videos behind it, they actually showed it looked like a drone strike. And then the explosion, and then all the soldiers were, like, dead on the ground. I don't know if it was just them trying to get something military for Veterans Day. I don't know. But that one didn't work for me, especially compared to the last one, where they had the headdresses. And,
yeah.
I don't know. It felt weird. Maybe I missed something there.
Fair enough. I was maybe looking at it more of a hype level. Like, they come out with so much energy, you get sucked in.
I would agree there. I just didn't know what they were doing with the rest of it.
Oh, well, not for everybody, I suppose, but either way,
I'm sorry. I got to jump in. I did not get it either. And I am like Mr. Lucha Brothers guy. So I was a little let down by that. I would rather just keep going with the headdress thing, man. Give me more of that. Give me more fire. I want to feel like you're channeling some kind of like Aztec warrior God spirit or something. And then this one, I had no idea. Maybe I was already too far in my own thought about what they were going to come out as.
Yeah,
I'll admit that, but I was lost. So.
Okay.
I think it was just the soldier piece. I just didn't understand the group of soldiers at the beginning.
Yeah, I didn't.
And I mean, the Luchas, they had sweet gear though. I will call that out. Like the camo with like the dragons and kind of the vibes they had going there were awesome. But yeah. Anyways, I had to interject there because for me that was like the first time they've come out and I've been like, the fuck was that? Like,
I won't sit here and defend it too much, but maybe they were going to war with FTR since FTR stole the AAA belts from them.
That's possible. Okay. I'd accept that as a possibility.
I'm just making sense of something you don't like. I don't know. It doesn't have to be everybody's cup of tea, but once again. So what ended up happening here in this match is typically the challenger will put forth what they want out of the champion, but this was the other way around. The Lucha Brothers wanted to face FTR for these belts because of everything that happened at the AAA pay-per-view event where FTR showed up in the Luchador masks, hidden. You didn't know who it was, and they ended up getting the win. So the Lucha Brothers wanted that revenge. And as soon as this bell rang, it was just hard hitting. And in fact, before the bell even rang, both teams started to brawl. And then once it did, it just knocking each other throughout the entire match. We saw Dax and Penta exchanging heavy shots out the gate. And then, of course, the Lucha Brothers brought that fast-paced action, and FTR kept trying to slow it down with a brutal series. I think this one really sticks out to me very early on. Both FTR were outside the ring. Penta went for a baseball slide underneath the third rope. FTR moves out of the way, get the counter, throw him into the barricade, which allows them to turn their focus back to Rey Fénix, who's attempting to do a vaulted springboard across body. They catch him and then throw him into Penta. And I was like, and it just kind of set the tone that these two teams, totally different styles, they're about to tell this hard-hitting story, whether it's the fast, quick shots or the full-on power moves. I just thought it was really well done. I love seeing the mix of different tag team styles.
Yeah, I would agree. I thought it was a pretty good match. It was an entertaining match. I do like both teams. I found myself, though, throughout the whole thing being like under-impressed, and it wasn't because of anything that was done in this match. Like, this was something I had to kind of go back and think about. It was like, was it a bad match, or was it just the fact that my last real major memory of the Lucha Brothers was the epic drag-down cage fight from the last pay-per-view, which was just like potentially like match of the year type deal. And so, like, it just kind of felt weird. Like, I was expecting a different level of velocity in the match, and with FTR, you're not going to get that. So, for me, it all worked, and it was still a good match with some decent storytelling throughout it. But, like, I just found myself, like, directly expecting the same as what we got in the last big match that the Lucha Bros had, and that was a wrong expectation on my point. I shouldn't have expected anything like that with all fists, no flips, FTR out here, you know?
It's true. Anthony did this one. I'm saying nothing's going to compare to that Lucha Brothers Young Bucks match from All Out. That one, as Chris said, it could potentially be match of the year, but still, like, did this one do it for you?
I will say it was a really good match. The thing that I thought zapped it for me, though, was actually the end, because it felt a little anticlimactic, because I wasn't sure if that was going to be the end. And then all of a sudden it was like 1, 2, 3.
Yeah.
And to what you were talking about earlier, that there was a lot of tit for tat. I thought they were both, I don't know who was going to win.
Right.
Sometimes that's good, but sometimes I want to see the challenger really put their work in, you know, and where you're like, oh my gosh, like this might be, they might win. And I never really got to that point because it was just really good action on both sides. And then all of a sudden it was over and I was like, oh, I didn't get that build. Like, I wasn't sure who was going to win.
Yeah.
We didn't get there. And then it was over. So I was left feeling a little like, oh man, like I wanted to see more, but it was still a really good match. I mean, they weren't doing anything not good in the ring. It was still really good and enjoyable to watch.
Right. And Alluding to that ending there, it did take away some points on what would be an excellent match. I don't think it was a 5-star match going into that ending, but it was a 4-star match maybe. And then this ending here dropped it down to, I would say, a 3-star match, because what ended up happening, FTR gets knocked to the outside. They go underneath the ring and they grab the fake Luchador masks that they won in their surprise visit to the AAA appearance. And they put them on, and I guess they were trying to do the whole who's the legal man bit.
Right.
But it ended up just not mattering, because Cash got back in the ring and immediately got his ass kicked.
Yeah.
And then pinned, and they lost. So it was like, well, why did you... It was this awkward, probably 3 to 4 minute sequence in which they were digging under the ring, putting on the mask. It doesn't help that Cash has chest hair and Dax does not. So when we've been seeing you wrestle all night, like, you can't really pull the illegal man thing. But just execution just wasn't there. So I would agree with you on that. Execution definitely knocked this one down. Chris, did you similar vibes?
Well, yeah, and I think that it was also a theme that we see throughout this pay-per-view, actually, because there was actually a botched finish in the pre-show match, and then this one didn't seem to feel 100% right. I wouldn't call it a botched. It was just an odd finish. And I think we actually saw a few different things happen throughout the other matches in the pay-per-view. So that was just kind of one overall thing. I thought seeing it twice in three matches, you know, you're kind of like, maybe they're not on their game, but it just seemed like something was off in that realm as far as how the finishes in some of these matches went. And this was right in there. Like, the announcers were clearly like, oh, I was the wrong guy, you know, but like the ref was acting like he didn't know. Like, like that didn't fit together either perfectly from a storytelling standpoint. So it wasn't the best that they've done, even though the match itself, 90% of it was just fine.
Yeah.
Yeah, the announcer was definitely feeding us as the viewers, like, that's not the legal guy.
Yeah.
And far be it for me to tell these professionals that have been doing it for decades that they don't know who the legal guy is, but there's no way anybody could have been keeping track of who the legal guy was at that point.
Yeah.
True.
There's just no way.
AEW tag team matches have a tendency to do that.
Yeah, yeah. That's a whole other chapter.
Indeed. But before we move off this one, I think I wanted to at least note the Eddie Guerrero, you know, both tribute slash mock that we saw happen in the middle of this match, in which we saw, I believe, Dax originally. He did the little Eddie shimmy with his shoulders. He was going to go for the Three Amigos, the triple snap suplexes, but eventually Penta stopped that from happening and delivered one of his own. And it was a nice little something we saw throughout the night. There were several Eddie Guerrero tributes throughout the night, because this was kind of an interesting moment that it was 16 years to the day and location of Eddie Guerrero passing away, which was just kind of wild. Obviously, that was probably planned to at least be in Minneapolis, like when they looked at dates and stuff. But it was nice to see an Eddie tribute.
It was very nice. And yeah, during that match, I was ready for it. Before I knew everything else, I knew it was going to happen. And I had said to Chris, I'm like, I'm just waiting for Phoenix to hit the Eddie shimmy and I'll be happy in this match. And then Dax hits it and I'm like, oh, Dax did it.
Yeah.
And then Ray hit it. And then as the night went on, I was like, oh, wait, there's something else going on. But I'm here for it all day long. I was already ready for it, so I got my money's worth and bonus as far as that stuff goes. I cried the day that Eddie died. I really did. So it was nice to see all that and then have kind of like look at it and say, wow, they really put all that stuff together.
For sure.
That's cool.
Very cool. Very cool. And we'll definitely come back later, because they're in the street fight. It shows up again and in a few other areas. But let's move on to that third match of the night, which was the tournament finale. Oh, yeah. Miro taking on Bryan Danielson. Winner gets the number one contendership for the AEW World Championship. And boys, I love seeing Bryan Danielson just enjoying wrestling again. It is so great to see. He looks fit. He looks trim. He smiles all the time. He's enjoying himself. And I was shocked when we headed in this one to find out that these two have never wrestled before. That's wild.
Wow.
You know, considering that they both came from WWE and there was a ton of crossover there. There's no way they didn't see each other. How have they never wrestled? Just kind of blows my mind.
Yeah, I wouldn't have bet that if you asked me. Like, I would have just assumed that at some point there was like a Rusev DB match.
Right.
On like a SmackDown, even if it wasn't for anything. Yeah, that's crazy.
Yeah, me too. And I saw in Brian his promo that he said he'd never beaten him, and I think I know now in my mind I thought that meant that he had lost to him before. I haven't wrestled him, I haven't beat him.
Yeah,
so I was like, oh, okay, I interpreted that differently, so it's interesting to hear that now. Yeah, I was here for it, and I agree, he looks great.
Yeah, looks so good. But they were clearly very familiar with each other once they got in the ring. As you know, in the early goings, we kept seeing Danielson trying to attack Miro's bad neck, as this has been exposed as a weakness. But Miro countering all of Danielson's, you know, offensive moves with just his brute strength. Like, the man is an animal. I'm stealing it from you, Batista. It's going on, Miro. Miro is the new animal. And that was definitely the story that they were trying to tell here. We saw some impressive athletic feats from both of them, but it was Miro's strength versus the crafty slash shiftiness of Bryan Danielson with the locks and the quick in and outs. And as we saw those quick in and outs, Miro would always find a counter. One of those that stuck out to me is Danielson going for the running knee and Miro countering it into a powerbomb.
Yeah.
Like that was just, it's exactly what you want to see, this big brute against kind of like a quicker guy. And he's like, quick jab, quick hit, quick jab, quick jab. And then all of a sudden, just boom, power move.
I love seeing power bombs. Power moves are just so fun to watch. It's one of the best parts of wrestling to me as far as the in-ring piece. And especially when somebody gets, you know, a reverse into a power bomb of some kind. And this match was set up perfectly for that sort of thing. And it was one interesting thing I thought about Bryan Danielson in this match was on some of the opponents that he's faced, the kicks and the chops really work on his opponent. In this match, that wasn't what was going to have to get done. He was going to have to rely on being in close submission range. But that really got highlighted as the match went on and he found out like, oh, these kicks and chops aren't going to work. Like, I got to get in range and I got to keep him off his feet and I got to wrestle around him, basically. I thought it highlighted, it made Miro look super strong and it made Bryan Danielson, who we think that he is, a very, very good wrestler.
For sure. And I think one of the moments that allude to that would be the rib kickoff, where they were kind of standing proud and tall in the middle of the ring, and Miro just opened up his entire midsection to, like, go ahead, kick me in the ribs. It's not going to do anything. And Danielson took a couple shots, did knock over the big tree, and then Miro hit him with one, and it instantly took him to his knees. And like that's perfect. You nailed it, exactly what they were trying to do here. And, you know, Bryan Danielson hasn't put on a bad match, I don't think, like, in his entire career. This one was no different, and they did a great job of telling that story.
Yeah, I thought that this one, the story was really the main highlight out of all this, and they got the time to do it right, where, it was kind of a little bit back and forth, but Miro not giving an inch, you know, there at the beginning. And then ultimately, Danielson kind of took control of the match after he did wear him down a little bit, and Miro had to kind of work himself back up towards the end. And I thought it just worked, you know, the whole way through. The test of strength is kind of how I looked at those kicks. It was like a different take on a test of strength with the side kicks. And that was a fun moment. But all in all, I thought that one thing I did want to see more out of and I didn't hear was I kind of want to see Danielson, his personality of this American Dragon character. I wanted to go up a notch or two in intensity, because it feels like he has this opportunity to be a little bit more intense or furious or like whatever than he was in WWE in that character. But yet he's like still just like the nicest guy there is. You know, he's like, like when he talks about Miro, he's just a great guy. You know, like I've never beaten him, but he's just a really, really good. He's just too nice about it almost.
Yeah.
And so I want to see that. You know, edge or intensity, attitude, whatever you want to call it, just pick up a little bit more. You know, he doesn't have to go heel, but give me some of that as a development from matches like this, so that way he's got a little bit more persona when he gets the belt at some point, because that is going to happen. But really, the one moment I will say that I'll call out here before we push on was that about three quarters of the way through the match, when Miro put Danielson in the game over. Mm-hmm. And Danielson became the first person, at least in AEW, to pull himself out of it. Like, didn't get submitted, walked, you know, pulled himself to the ropes, even though they were telling this whole power story and, like, the whole build of the game over move has been so powerful. I absolutely hated that.
Oh.
I thought that it just didn't make sense for the size difference and everything. Like, that's Miro's, you know, main move. I'm such a Miro guy. I didn't like that moment. And then they followed it up almost immediately with Danielson putting Miro into a submission. And Anthony will tell you, I was almost like yelling at the TV because I thought that they were going to submit Miro immediately right there without him crawling 2 feet to the ropes. And so like I was like getting a little worried that I was going to be really mad about this match and how it came out. Like, I expected the finish to happen, what happened. But But I was like, oh man, if they screw Miro over here after him losing the belt to Sammy, I was like, I am going to have a huge bone to pick with Tony Khan for the first time really since AEW has started. And didn't quite go that way, but there was a moment there set up with that escape that I was like, I don't see. Like, if Lance Archer was in the Game Over and pulled himself out of it.
Yeah, big dude.
That would make some sense. You know, a big man, yeah. But, like, that just didn't fit kind of the story they were telling, in my opinion. And so, I almost would have rather them not even use the move versus them taking that move down a peg.
Fair enough. Or, I'm going to spin something again here.
And give
say,
it to me.
Or is it showing that Daniel Bryan is just a tough piece of iron that can't be broken, you know, very Rocky IV, where
he's stronger than Miro.
And that's that grit that you're looking for. He's got to go next level, but instead of using it on offense, he uses it on defense.
That's possible. You know, I just, you know me, I'm all in on Miro. Like,
yeah,
you know, he's God's favorite champion. He might be Chris's favorite champion, you know?
Yeah, I can confirm Chris was talking to Tony Khan out loud at that moment. My eyeballs were sideways, like, oh boy, something's going to happen. Yeah, I would think I would have rather somewhere in the middle use some kind of reverse method versus like powering and clawing forward. That part was a little hard to understand. But if he like pulled him forward and, you know,
like got, a counter.
Yeah, yeah, a counter move, that would make more sense. And maybe go between his legs behind him and, you know, do something. That would make a little more sense.
Like, they've now set the precedent that, like, almost any, like, Jungle Boy could just, like, walk out of the Game Over. And that's my problem. So,
We'll see how that one works out. Because you got to think, Bryan Danielson is on a whole other level. And they've been putting the best wrestler in the world. Like, everybody's saying it. So, like, maybe they're coming at it from that end.
I won't die on the hill, but that was my thoughts at the moment.
Fair enough. Well, the ending saw Miro taking Danielson to the top rope, where Danielson got the quick reversal and hit a tornado DDT from that top rope, or the second rope, excuse me. Then once he gets down on the mat, he locks in the guillotine choke, and the whole match got waved off. So it's kind of interesting. Miro did not tap. He got knocked out. Love when they twist that. Although, you know, I guess that's better than his shoulders being flat on the mat. Chris, is Miro is your champion here. Is that an acceptable way to lose to you?
I thought that helped say the character. It was just, once again, Mart, it was a botched finish. If you saw what happened, he went for the DDT and then like fell off of him and had to awkwardly get up and like put him quickly in the chokehold. And they were like ringing the bell, like as he was grabbing him being knocked out. And to me, it looked more like he was supposed to hang on. So it was like the knockout, you know, the DDT straight into holding, like keeping the hold.
Yeah.
And so once again, like, it didn't ruin the match, but it was just like the third consecutive time where they've had these good matches that had these really kind of odd moments in the finish. And so I thought that, you know, put a little bit of a damper on it, even though I did prefer the knockout mode, you know, versus a clean, you know, he took Miro out kind of deal.
Well, they just can't seem to stick the landing here on these early couple matches as they go to finish. But we'll move on to the next one, which was Christian Cage and Jurassic Express taking on the Super Click in a DQ Falls Count Anywhere match. This one, it was just like most Falls Count Anywhere matches, it was just chaotic and all throughout the arena. Add in the fact that it was a 3v3, so multiple fights can break out at any point. It did start out as a in the ring and just instantly divulged into anarchy through the crowd. Like I said, up the entrance ramp. Anthony, these matches are usually a ton of fun because it's all just insanity. But were there any high spots that stuck out to you?
Woo. Well, tables, ladders, and chairs. Another, you know, I was a big ECW guy growing up. So anytime they're reaching underneath something, behind something, pulling something else out, I'm excited. I'm salivating. I'm throwing popcorn down. I really liked Sammy Guevara going up that super tall ladder and hitting that falling senton on the table. That was spectacular. It wasn't the biggest spot, but I just had a fun moment watching Christian go up through the crowd, and he looked like he was going to do kind of a splash from that little stairwell.
Yeah.
And it wasn't super crazily high, and Chris was like, oh, he's going to do a splash from there. And then he climbed and went even further and was like, no, I'm doing it from up here. That was sweet. That guy's got some guts. And I appreciate everything Christian's doing. And then the thing that kind of made me go, holy shit, was definitely the thumbtacks in the mouth.
Oh,
when
yeah.
They got when Adam yeah. Cole had Jungle Boy in like that camel clutch move, and then they put the thumbtacks in his mouth, and they didn't put like three or four. They chock full, stuffed his mouth full of thumbtacks, and they did their whole running against the ropes, and then the kiss, and then the double kick, and thumbtacks literally went flying out of his mouth. I didn't see him bleeding from his mouth, but either way, I was like in the back of my chair, my hands on my head, like, oh my God, I can't believe I'm watching. The thought that they even thought of this has already won me over. However this gets executed, even if they don't kick him, the thought that they were even thinking about doing it has got me sold.
Huge cringe.
Yeah, huge cringe. Yeah. And then I'm probably taking them all, but the shooting star press off of the ramp that Luchasaurus did, that's just like, you know, I was having a conversation with Chris about a little bit about his background and stuff. I won't get into that, but to see him go and do that, like, that was fantastic. So there was a lot to enjoy in this match for sure.
For sure. And they did do an excellent buildup of chairs to tables to ladders.
Yeah.
Like in the beginning, it was all chairs, and then they got out the tables, put some people through some tables, and then got out that big ladder, a la Jeff Hardy, kind of senton off the top for Sammy Guevara. It was pretty sweet. I don't know if Anthony took all of them, Chris, but are there any extras that stuck out to you?
No, it's so funny. I must be in rare form here, or maybe JR was in rare form, because I've got a whole lot of JR notes here from this event.
I have one. Do you mind if I get mine in real quick?
Go for it, because it might be the same one.
Never count out a dinosaur?
No, wasn't it. There was another one, actually. I think Tony Schiavone said something like, boom goes the dinosaur. So there was like another one there. But it was at the beginning, because the Elite was dressed a whole lot like the Hart Foundation.
Mm-hmm.
And JR had actually said when they were all in the ring, quote, it looks like a Bret Hart meet and greet. And that was just fantastic, man. Like, they was just, JR was full of one-liners, man. It was solid.
Oh, that's good.
But the match, I mean, all throughout the match, there was just spot after spot. And they came in like these two chunks, you know, where, like Anthony was mentioning, you had the dive from Christian, but like right before that, you got Matt Jackson doing a huge elbow drop onto the outside through a table, and Jungle Boy with a step-up Hurricane Rana to put Adam Cole through a table on the outside. So you had like three big spots there, and then they walk up the ramp, and it was just one thing after the other, either big slams right there onto that steel screen or whatever it is, you know, plexiglass over that big HD screen, which, shout out, is freaking sweet.
Yeah.
Like that, this is a good look. And then lots of stuff with them throwing people off the ramp. And, you know, yeah, that shooting star press, standing shooting star press from Luchasaurus, who's what, like 6'5 or something, 6'6. He's like almost Kane.
Jeez, yeah.
And he does this shooting star press from flat foot off that, you know, 10, 15 foot ramp, whatever. I mean, that was just next level. Oh my God.
Oh, for sure, for sure. The dude is a freak of an athlete for being 6'6", 6'7", like you said, whatever he is. A standing shooting star press off a stage onto like, what, like 6'7" dudes.
Oh,
incredible, incredible.
Well, and even the camera was so good, because the camera went straight to Jungle Boy right after that, and you literally see him look, and whether it was planned or not, he literally mouthed. He was like, holy shit.
Yeah.
Awesome.
And it was just this great moment, you know. Maybe they didn't. They couldn't plan that. You know, it just worked out. But it was just the timing of it all made it really memorable.
It was. But as he turned around, Jungle Boy is there on the entrance ramp. And we've also got Nick Jackson and Christian. And Christian has beaten down Nick Jackson. He's about to go for the concerto and offers it to Jungle Boy. And Jungle Boy accepts. He says, yep, I'll go ahead. I'll deliver this final womp on his head and get the pin. And he does. So our faces stand tall. It was crazy. It was definitely entertaining. The only thing I might say, and this kind of applies to a few matches, especially the next one on the night, it went just a hair too long. Like, we talk about not executing the finish, not landing the finish. It felt like sometimes this could be the reason why. Is like, you just go an extra 3 to 5 minutes, And if you had pulled the trigger on the finish before, it may have felt more natural.
Yeah.
I don't know if you guys have any thoughts on that one. Like I said, the next match of the night, I definitely think went too long.
I think it's fair. I mean, that definitely does happen sometimes with wrestling. You know, they're trying to fill a time block maybe that they've been given, so you have to expand or whatever it may be. I don't really have any other thoughts, but I just know that Anthony had the call of the night when we were watching this last night when it came to this moment with Jungle Boy. Do you remember what you said, Anthony?
I might have said the phrase Jungle Man. I'm not sure if that's the one you're referring to.
I think you said something to the effect of Jungle Boy just became a Jungle Man when he did the concerto. Because it was like a story they were telling, right? Like he didn't want to do it the other day, and then like he finally, you know, grew up and made the hard decision to do this.
He's got the scruff growing, and he came in jeans today.
He put on pants.
He's wearing pants.
Yep. The official attire of wrestling street fights.
Yeah, and you could tell, you know, he always does the look into the crowd, but he's kind of had a different look those last couple of days that we've seen him.
Yeah.
And it's kind of weird because it's kind of a heelish move to, like, squash somebody's head like that with the chairs.
For sure.
But, yeah, you could tell he's like, I'm ready, you know, and it's like, what is he talking about? Obviously, he's talking about he's ready to hit this guy in the head with a chair, but it felt like he might be saying, I'm ready to take a next step.
So
I was like, I think he just became Jungle Man now.
Yeah, it was such a good, like, organic comment.
There you
was
go.
Like,
he's ready to take that next step. And it's never a heel move when you're doing it to Nick Jackson.
True. It's always acceptable.
We'll move on to the next match. Like I said, it went a little too long for me, but it was the Bastard Pack and Cody Rhodes taking on Andrade, Ida Edolo, and Malakai Black. The night, it just seemed to highlight tag matches all night, and it was kind of cool. As a tag match fan, I appreciate that. And I will say, before this one got started, Malakai Black had a badass entrance.
Yes.
I'm glad we can agree on this entrance, because I was like, man, this one is just badassery. And I know they don't do a lot of teleporting spooky shit in AEW, but they did it here, and I thought it worked well.
Yeah, the double camera shot or whatever they did with, like, the silhouette of him up close and then, like, the pulled back of him, you know, sitting on the... It was really cool imagery.
Yeah.
It's like he's just getting better and better.
Oh, yeah. Absolutely. This one kicked off, and as expected, when you have these makeshift tag teams, there's just some communication problems on both sides. You know, you would get blind tags or interruptions, things like that, because these pairs don't normally work together. But you did see the heels clearly working better than their opponents were and allowed them to take the advantage early. But of course, things balanced out, and all throughout the match, all four men got featured. But I'll say the overall vibe, it just never got going. And in my opinion, looking at the four competitors in this match, this should have been a lot better than it was. And Anthony, I don't know if you were gushing over it or if you felt the same way. It just felt like these are four top tier guys, in my opinion, and they should be able to handle a spot like this better.
Yeah, I agree. I will say everybody executed well. It was still very solid in-ring work by everybody. So that, you know, I will give credit to that all day long. I think JR summed up what I was thinking. I'm surprised that he said it out loud, because I was definitely saying it out loud too. He's like, this doesn't feel like a regular match. It just feels like four individuals in a match. And he didn't really elaborate on that. And that's kind of where I was too. It's like, I kind of get, you know, obviously Cody and Malakai have had their thing, and Pac and Andrade have had their thing. But when you put it all together, like, awesome spots, awesome in-ring work. I didn't really get it. So that's kind of where I was with it.
That's fair. I did not hear that comment, but I think that's perfect.
Yeah, it was either a huge miscalculation with this match, or they are playing a long game. Because, you know, in the build over the last couple of weeks, we've seen the crowds turning on Cody for whatever reason, whether it's fully organic or just everybody's kind of on this train now, right? But you saw Cody get booed again when he came in. And he was the only face in this match. All three other heels got cheered, you know, completely. Cody gets booed. Then he had some light Cody sucks chance that happened as the match happened. And he almost looked like he responded. I don't know if you caught that, but he actually turned around to the crowd when that happened and kind of gave him a look that was caught on camera. And I don't know if that was necessarily like
I saw that
him just playing to it or it was an actual reaction. But I think that there's something there. And so, yeah, either the miscalculation was that they made this a tag match when it should have been a fatal four-way. I think a fatal four-way would have elevated this to a higher status. Or they are long-gaming us in the fact that Cody is going to do some sort of a heel turn or something, and they wanted kind of this spot for him to come out on a promo and be like, you know, you had three horrible assholes out here with me, and you're cheering them, and I'm out here killing myself, to, you know what I mean? Something like that, and then it kind of forms him going down that path. But one way or the other, I just thought that that was worth note.
Yeah.
You know, like it either was a mistake or we're getting conned here for the moment. But yeah, to Anthony's point, there were still some good spots. All these guys are great wrestlers.
Yeah.
You know, there's no arguing that. It just didn't have a purpose. And so it was kind of hard to really care when Cody's in this spot where everybody feels like he's just like forcing himself onto the cards.
Yeah. Yeah. And like I said, on top of me feeling like this one went too long, it was like, why, what are we doing here? There are 10 matches on this card. This is going to be a long pay-per-view.
Right.
And you're eating up 25 minutes with something that I'm not even sure where it's going to go after this.
So you could argue that the women's buy-in tag team match had like more purpose, mm-hmm. you know, and all of that. It was even maybe a better tag match. So it was just a matter of just putting these faces on the card, I thought. So
yeah,
we'll see where it goes, but we got nothing out of this long term.
No, we got Arn pulling a Glock on Jose. That's what we got.
Oh,
that's
man.
Yes, I forgot about
that. Oh, man. I definitely popped for that. I was like, oh, that was fantastic.
That was funny. That was
I'm glad funny. You brought that up. See, those are the things I don't remember. And then you say it and I'm like, that was the best moment of that match. Thank you.
It was, you gave me that.
Thank you, Kyle.
Yeah.
Arn pulling the finger gun out of his waistband was definitely the spot of this match.
I think, yeah, the Jose the assistant responding like it was a real gun is my, like, oh, God. Yeah. And I was like, man, he's not about to give him he's like, wait. And I also was like, we're not going to do a spine buster on the outside. These two dudes are like in their 70s. That's not happening.
Right.
Either way, before we move on, we should point out the finish.
Yep.
Andrade tagged in as Cody and Malakai spilled outside into the crowd, but Pac was on a hot streak, and that wasn't going to be taken away. So he came in with a ton of offense, including a Poison Rana and then a Black Arrow, got the victory, and that was that. We will move on. There was some after-match shenanigans, but we will see where it goes before highlighting it. But we'll move on to the AEW Women's World Championship, Britt Baker taking on Ty Conti. This one, I really had high expectations. Britt Baker is on just the hottest streak right now. And maybe the only, you know, Thunder Rosa is probably a 1A, but Britt Baker is on a level by herself. And it comes to the AEW women's division. And I don't know whether that's because of pushes or whatever, if she's actually just delivering.
All of the above.
I was really, really hoping Conti would be able to just kind of have a statement match for herself. And I didn't get it here, fellas. At least in my opinion, this one felt very ho-hum. And so we'll shift it over to the guest here. I know these women were in a tough spot. Being late in the show, there was a lot of really good matches. You know, it was a lot of uptick before them. We had seen a lot of insanity with the DQ match and the MJF Darby match. Where did this one land with you?
I had a different approach to watching this. I actually had my bar a little bit lower so that I wouldn't get disappointed. But I will admit, part of that is I haven't watched a lot of Ty Conti. I'm not like a super mega fan of her work yet. But actually, that's what I wanted to highlight when I thought about this match. Even though I had some issues with the way I thought Britt Baker looked during that match, which was getting beat up the whole time.
Yeah.
I'll say that. And then on the other side of my mouth, I'll say I kind of like it when the champion gets taken to their limits and then still wins. So I thought this did a really good job at highlighting Tay Conti for the people like me who were kind of like, why is this? Like, it seems like it should be Thunder Rosa or somebody like that having this match. What I got out of it was Ty Conti belongs because she took her to her limit. Obviously, she was totally gassed at the end of that match and couldn't even get up off of the mat after the, after the finish there. And, you know, she just took Britt to her limit. So I kind of liked what I got out of it. You know, I didn't like all the in-ring work as much as some of the other matches, but I got something out of it that I wasn't really expecting. And so I liked it.
Nice, nice. Chris, did this one to live up?
It was tough. It wasn't a bad match by any means, but I kept struggling to put my finger on it when we were watching it last night. And I think I said to Anthony, like, it kind of felt like it was in slow-mo.
Yeah.
Like, it almost felt like they were gassed before they started and that it never quite got up to the full speed of top-tier, you know, for a championship match. And I don't know what that was from. Like, I don't know if it was them not being familiar with each other, or I know that they've been kind of playing these storylines and whatnot of gray area of, like, is Britt Baker hurt to some extent? You know, there's been some of that. So, like, I don't know what that was, but it, like, we were watching it and I kept kind of being like, I don't, like, where's this? Like, they were like at like a 7 out of 10 or something, you know?
Yeah.
And so that felt a little weird, but I did think that Ty Conti did fairly well. It was a little bit more in the realm of, like, maybe the best match I've seen from her, at least singles match. So it probably helped kick her up a little bit for me there. I definitely thought it was better than the Britt Baker versus Chris Statlander match that we got a couple pay-per-views back or a couple events back, as far as a lesser-known talent coming up with a championship shot. Like, I thought Tay Conti performed better, and it was overall a better match there.
Yeah.
A little bit different styles, right? And Tay's probably got more striking and things like that, but it wasn't overly memorable for me. I think in the end, it's one of her, Britt Baker's, lesser overall matches. So I feel like I'm kind of waffling back and forth, but it just was like a meh.
Yeah, it was just kind of there.
You know?
Yeah.
That's where I kind of landed on this one.
Some of it I think I might blame on the crowd, because they just didn't seem invested. And maybe it's because it was a little telegraph that Britt was not going to be losing the belt on this night.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And that risk never, you know, she got taken to her limits, absolutely, to what Anthony said. But to me, it never felt like she was really going to lose.
Yeah, that too.
I was never worried about that. And I think the crowd knew that too. So their investment was low. But it kind of summed up everything that happened here in the middle, where, like, the pay-per-view as a whole came out hot and was on the uptick, and then it just started to taper off, and you were trying to get a match that sent it back up. You know, we knew it was going to dip. You can't just keep going up and up and up and up. Like, it's going to dip, and, like, when it dipped, it never seemed to quite, like, reach the height, you know, to the peak that it was. So in the end, Britt Baker got the win via the roll-up reversal. She went to put Tay in the lockjaw. Tay rolls over, and then Britt rolls over. She kept it going and got the reversal on her. It's like, yeah, this is a pay-per-view match. You kind of want a more definitive win.
Yeah.
So, but Britt retains and moves on. We'll see who she faces next, because obviously the tournament is going to determine the TBS champion, not the number one contender for the women's belt. So who comes in and challenges now?
Yeah, we'll have to see there. I think, just to make your point, like, it followed the line of the weird finishes. Like, we saw Britt Baker give Tay Conti in this match 3 stomps.
Right.
3 curb stomps. One of them was on the steel steps. And yet, like, she kept kicking out and still was, like, strong enough not to let Britt Baker put in the lockjaw. Like, that didn't add up to me either.
Yeah.
You know? So it was just, like, another one of those moments where, like, I thought she should have been done after the second stomp, after the steel step stomp, right? And it just kept dragging on. So that I just wanted to throw that out there, because there was just something odd about this pay-per-view when it came to that. Like, AEW hasn't been like that up until this point. But next up, I'd be interested to hear what Anthony thinks as far as where Britt Baker's going to go from here.
That's the question, right? And I don't know. I'll admit, I'm kind of, like, already setting my sights on, like, I almost said the hose belt. Yeah. The TBS championship. I meant hose because of the way it looks, not because.
Yeah.
So
it's an established internet.
It's an established, okay.
Yeah. Established, so, internet, yeah.
I hate that I just said that, but, you know, I'm kind of like, okay, what's going to happen there? So my thoughts have been on who's going to win that belt. So I really don't know. I don't know what to offer on that. particular topic. I'm curious to see maybe a rematch with Tay, because I know what you guys are all saying, but it's almost like what I got out of this is it wasn't so much the storyline and the rivalry. It was like Tay is somebody that they're going to be pushing here.
Hmm.
So maybe this is the beginning of, like, you know, I'm not going to say Hangman, but something where it's like, this person's clearly been gunning for the top. They're clearly invested in trying to win that belt, and they're great with the crowd, and maybe, you know, she'll come back even stronger. You know, we'll see. So I wouldn't mind seeing them try to go at it again.
That's a good take. Yeah. Cause I mean, they're going to be in a weird spot with the TBS championship, right? Cause you're going to essentially assume that whoever fights for that belt are like the number two and number three women in the entire division. And you're not necessarily going to be able to throw the winner of the TBS championship right at Britt Baker, because now you got champion for champion too soon for that, right? But then it would also be odd to take, like, the loser and make them next in line for the bigger, better belt.
Yeah.
So, yeah, like, that's where I was struggling, is, like, who comes out of this tournament that is seemingly determining the second best women's wrestler in the division? So maybe you're onto something there, Anthony, with someone like Tay Conti. Took her to the limits. Almost could have beat her in a way, and maybe give her some sort of a rematch or figure out a way to do something there.
Yeah, I could see her saying, like, you thought you got rid of me, but you didn't, you know?
Yeah.
And it's like, okay. You know, and then I almost forgot. I think it's probably inevitable at some point that Jamie Hayter will turn on Britt Baker.
Yeah.
I don't think we're there yet, and I'm not saying it should happen right away, but, you know, she's a physical presence for sure. She's a really solid ring worker. So I think that's something, you know, when will that happen? I don't know, but that's definitely, I think, in the future for Britt Baker to have to handle.
Yeah, another great point.
Another one. I'd like to see Hayter maybe win the TBS belt and then be like, look, I have this. I don't need you.
Ooh, that'd be good. Yeah.
And kind of break off on her own. But either way, we'll keep trucking along here with this pay-per-view, as it was CM Punk versus Eddie Kingston next. Punk just keeps those fans guessing on what type of trunks he's going to bring to the ring, whether it's going to be pants or trunks, or last night, the boxers.
The boxer shorts.
The boxer shorts. Were you guys a fan of the boxer shorts?
No, we spent like half the time of this match talking about it, though.
There's such a distraction. He has to know what he's doing.
And I mean, those balls were going to come out at some point. Like, they were like too loose. I don't know. Like, it was weird. Like, just saying.
Yeah, I prefer the pants. I'll just leave it at that.
Okay. Oh, the pants over the trunks?
Yeah, I prefer the pants.
Oh, okay.
I think I might be alone in that, but I think the black pants are a good look.
Yeah, that's fair. That's fair. But either way, this one got started very fast and furious, with Kingston delivering a spinning back fist before the match even started, instantly dropping Punk.
It was knocked him unconscious.
It was a flashback. Honestly, okay, so what I thought was going to happen was, I thought it was a flashback to the MMA flash knockout of being like, oh, Street Fighter catching a quick hit on CM Punk. But it did not. Punk eventually got back up, and it set the tone for a very hard-hitting match. And that's kind of the 2 points that I have here. There were two things that really stuck out. A lot of hard hits and a lot of middle fingers.
Yeah.
And it was just all throughout this match. They just kept either hitting each other as hard as possible and then flicking each other off.
Yeah, this match was whatever to me. It was a total throwaway. It was rushed, like weirdly short build, and they put it together. And then it was kind of a flash in the pan compared to the rest of the matches. Like, it was really, really short. And, I mean, I'm not high on CM Punk or Eddie Kingston, so that might have been some of it. But all in all, it was just kind of like, yeah, that happened.
Anthony, you might be a little more hip to the indie history between these two, as given that deep wrestling knowledge. What did you think?
The crowd clearly supports Eddie Kingston here. So that was a big takeaway for me, because it's like, regardless of what the outcome was going to be, I don't see the fans letting this one up anytime soon. So I think it's, hey, get used to it. They got some beef that's got to get settled still, regardless of how the match ended up. So that was one thing. So I'm kind of just going to say, okay, let me just invest in this a little bit, because I don't think that was the last that they'll see each other in the ring. I was really happy with how physical it was, actually. I really like when guys are laying their shit in, as Stone Cold Steve Austin would say. And they were definitely doing that. So I liked how intense it was. But I agree with Chris. It was kind of rushed to throw it in there. Like, they kind of teased it a week and a half ago that, hey, maybe we'll do it at Full Gear, you know? And I remember thinking, like, isn't it, like, already about to be Full Gear right now? And we're still making a match. Yeah. Like, that's kind of weird. For what we got, this is another one where I just set my bar low, and hopefully I'll get pleasantly surprised. And I was happy with it just because of how physical it was. So, you know, Punk got the win. I was happy Eddie walked out like that. And, you know, we'll see where it goes from here.
Nice. Yep. As Anthony said, double GTO to get that win. And then in a long post match, Punk tried to shake Kingston's hand, but Kingston was having none of it and just walked out, probably setting up a round two. Chris, any final thoughts on this one?
I mean, my favorite moment of the whole thing, I will say, was when Punk was cut open and Eddie took the handful of blood and smeared it on his own face.
Oh, God,
and then they kept pounding each other over it. It was kind of gross, I'm not going to lie, but like that was like one of those, like, only Eddie Kingston can kind of do those types of things. So I thought that was cool. The one point I think is noteworthy, and it kind of goes along with what Anthony said, is that this might have been the first time since CM Punk has come back where we actually heard, like, counter chants to him.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Like, there was a moment where you had the Eddie chants going, and there was the back and forth, Eddie, CM Punk. And that was just kind of like, okay, that was the one time so far that the AEW crowd has backed off from their unrelenting support of CM Punk. So maybe that does help develop this into, like, a program and a thing moving forward from a storyline perspective.
Yeah, these were two guys. Obviously, you can't know everything about every wrestler in the independent scene, right? It's too much. And these two are ones that I did not have a lot of background on in their indie days. But to what we were saying in the crowd, I noticed, like on Reddit and stuff, the same thing, that all of a sudden, everybody knows CM Punk is kind of a jerk behind the scenes stuff that I wasn't hearing, you know, 2 months ago. And it's like, were these people just waiting for this moment to come to start shitting on them? Or is it now that I'm looking at it? Because, you know, I don't know where it came from, but all of a sudden there's like, well, there's stories, you know, and this and that. And then Eddie's promos, obviously we don't know what's real and what's not as far as some of that stuff goes and their background. And the people in the locker room don't want you here. I find that hard to believe, but now we're getting into the part why wrestling is really cool. Cause it's like, well, what's real?
True.
What's the story here? I want to know more. So I'm biting on that, and that's why I kind of liked that we're going to see a little bit more of that. And I'm not even a big Eddie Kingston fan, although I put the mic in his hand, I'll turn the TV on for sure.
Right.
Yeah, that's kind of what I was getting out of it.
Fair enough. Well, we'll see what happens coming out of that one. It's two fan favorites, or maybe soon to be a fan hated person, but veterans of the game. And I'm sure they'll take it somewhere interesting. But next up was the Minneapolis Street Fight, seeing the Inner Circle take on the Men of the Year and American Top Team. It was the final tag team highlight of the evening. As I said, this pay-per-view was chock full of tag team matches. And we saw Scorpio Sky and Sammy Guevara starting the match. And it seemed like both parties were just prepared to have a normal 5v5 tag match. But that did not stick around, as it was a street fight. And after some chaos in the ring, it all broke out. So very similar to the DQ Falls Count Anywhere matches, there were a ton of highlights. This one was all over the place and chaotic. We'll shift it over to Chris for any top highlights that you saw out of this one.
There was a few moments. It started out a little slow and kind of rough. And I mean, with how bad, like, anything with the American Top Team stuff and Dan Lambert has been, it's like, I hate it. I'm not going to lie. Like, when he comes on, it's like the moments in Dynamite and Rampage where I just tune out because it's just been meh, like,
yeah,
you know, annoying more than anything. But it did turn out to be a little bit more entertaining than I expected as it moved through. And I thought that there was a few interesting spots with DeSantos and, you know, some of these guys that haven't done a whole lot in the ring. But for me, I think maybe like one of my top moments was just the use of all the weapons.
Yeah.
You know, we saw like the Prince symbol get pulled out by Jericho, and steel pipes and hockey sticks and like a toaster at one point. Like there was just some really weird, a water ski,
yeah,
you know, like some really, really odd weapons to be used that I thought just really made it fun and kind of helped save this match. Cause I could probably spend more time calling out some of the glaring botches that happened.
Oh yeah.
In this one,
it was rough all around, but we'll stick to the positives. And actually one thing I'm going to point out here with Sammy Guevara's giant ladder, it was so iconic in my brain that I actually talked about it in a different match earlier. And it just hit me that
You agree. I think I mentioned that in the other match, but now that you just said that, I was like, wait a minute, that wasn't then. We're talking about that now.
Yeah, it just hit me that we talked about it in the Super Click Jurassic Express match. Yeah, and I'm like, No, that happened in this match. Sammy Guevara is everywhere.
He is.
That's true. That camera shot of him up on the ladder with the lighting and everything. I think I said to Anthony, I was like, that's going to get put into like the opening of Dynamite. Like you're going to see that image, I think.
Oh yeah.
On a lot of AEW promo stuff here moving forward. Cause it was just perfect.
Indeed. But I think you highlighted it perfectly. The best thing that sums up this match is the different weapons and the Prince symbol, all of the above. Anthony, any outside of this giant ladder match that is so iconic, it's taken over the entire night, any big ones for you?
I was surprisingly entertained. This is one where I set the bar the lowest. And then I was like, at one point, I think I even told Chris, I was like, I'm entertained right now. My feet are up.
Yeah,
I'm entertained right now. So I really like actually seeing the trust with Junior Dos Santos. He did get to pull off a superplex off the top ropes. I think I saw him do a standing moonsault splash on somebody. I was like, okay, I mean, he learned some wrestling moves and he got in there. And, you know, that's the suplex off the top rope is not kid's play. That's like a real thing that somebody can get real hurt real bad.
Yeah.
True, yeah.
And that got executed really well. So, you know, by the end, I was like, that was better than I thought. Obviously, if you nitpick the piece by piece, there's a lot to go around that wasn't so great. But by the end, I was like, okay, I enjoyed that. That wasn't too bad. I think what you said, Kyle, is what sticks out to me is that it felt chaotic. And that's probably why I thought that ladder spot was in the other one, because it was so hard to keep track of what was what.
Yeah.
That was the high spot for me, that ladder. The low spot was Jericho jumping onto the ropes and being like, Junior!
Yeah. Junior totally missed that spot.
Yeah, missing it. So I was like, but then, you know, we got my second favorite part of that match. One of my favorite parts of the night was Jericho doing his shimmy and the frog splash.
Yeah.
I was like, he's doing the shimmy. He's going to go up to do the frog splash. He's doing the frog splash as he's in the air. And I'm like, he just frog splashed him. I popped for that. I really enjoyed that. So, you know, I was entertained by that match. I was.
Indeed. And that Eddie tribute from Jericho on to Dan Lambert ended up giving them the win. The Inner Circle stands tall. We don't need to fully dissect all the botches and screw up moments. American Top Team has a lot of learning to do.
Yeah,
and
they can go do it somewhere else, in my opinion.
Yeah, they can do it off camera
or on
Rampage or Dark.
Yeah.
I'm with you. I don't need to see them on Dynamite anymore, especially if this is what they're going to look like. Now, if they'd come out the gate firing and looked amazing, I'd be like, okay, you now deserve the whatever X number of minutes you get on Dynamite each week. But seeing this, now you need to go hone your craft and then come back.
Yeah.
All right. So let's move on to the finale. But before we get there, we talked about it up front at the very beginning. So we'll talk about it real quickly here again. And that was Jay Lethal announcing that he is indeed All Elite, coming out, getting the interview with Tony Schiavone, and immediately challenging Sammy Guevara for that TNT championship, accepting the open challenge. So we should see that on Dynamite this upcoming week. Anthony, you big Jay Lethal guy, you said it earlier. You said he's a good promo. He's good in-ring. How stoked are you to see Jay Lethal in AEW?
I'm really excited. I've been telling Chris for a long time, I could see him in WWE and then AEW. I was like, I'd like to see Jay Lethal. And when I saw him come out, I was like, yes. And I also love that he's challenging for the TV title because he's a TV champion type of guy.
Yeah.
With his style of wrestling, it's very exciting and easy to watch. He's very smooth, very athletic. He's great in promos, either by himself or going tit for tat with somebody on the mic. And he's kind of got like a pleasant attitude about him. So if you haven't watched him before, you'll see like he kind of just always has a smile when he's talking. So I'm excited to see him on TV. Put him on Dynamite every single week. You know, we'll come back. If I'm wrong, I'm wrong. But he's I think he's in his mid-30s now. He's had some really great matches with some really great guys, Samoa Joe, AJ Styles, and on and on. He's spent some time in the ring with Ric Flair, going toe-to-toe on the mic with him as well. Like, and he stood up, and he held his own in there. So I know he can go in there and talk with anybody, to anybody, about anything. So I'm excited to see what Jay Lethal comes with.
Yeah, we will see. He's got a big, you know, championship challenge in his debut. So that always comes with a lot of pressure.
Sorry, one quick thing. I hope that he doesn't just jump into one of these factions that seem to be snatching everybody up like black holes.
Yeah.
Just let Jay Lethal be Jay Lethal. Doesn't need to be like, you know, what they're doing with Dante Martin. And I'm fine with what they're doing with him, but not everybody has to be in a faction. I hope he just does his own thing for a bit.
Yeah.
Yeah, and to that point, just the one thing I was going to say is I think the biggest question, though, is what version of Jay Lethal will we see? You know, will it be like the Macho Man Randy Savage emulating one, the Flair? Like, he's had some different characters and stuff, or will he just be standard Jay Lethal? I don't know. I think that's what I'm most intrigued now to see is when he comes out on Wednesday,
you
know, what version are we going to get?
Well, that's kind of one of the things I like about his wrestling style is that you see all those elements that are a part of his personality and a part of why he likes wrestling, like in the way he talks, in the way he moves, whether he's doing a move to somebody or just like the mannerisms between, like, it's like a flash of Bret Hart, a flash of Ric Flair, a flash of Macho Man. It's just the way that he moves. You see all these things and it's not like one thing he's copying. It's just all part of his style. That's something I hope that you guys will see if you haven't seen him before, and love to talk with you guys another time about what you see out of that.
Yeah, for sure, for sure. I envision a state of wrestling conversation coming soon. We'll move on to this main event that was Kenny Omega taking on the challenger Hangman Adam Page for the AEW World Championship, and boy was this one a long time coming. Adam Page has been climbing that mountain, getting knocked back down, climbing it again. And as this one got started, it certainly was scrappy. So much going on. These two have a long history together, both as tag team partners and rivals. Mix in the fact that you've got old carny piece of poop Don Callis in the corner, always getting involved, pulling at Page's boots, and even taking moments when the ref's distracted to choke him with the ropes. It was just all chaos. You know, these two know each other so well, and they're just such good performers. I really think they put on a top-class main event here. You know, maybe not, in my personal opinion, the match of the night, but you knew where this was headed, and they got the job done and thoroughly impressed. So I'll shift it over to Chris. Did this one hit all the right notes for you? Is it what you wanted to see? You know, we saw Paige hit Terminator dive to the outside, and we saw moonsaults, tiger drivers, avalanche exploders, flying lariats, tables, people going through tables. This was a main event showcase. So did this one check all the boxes, do all the right things?
I thought it did. I thought that from the start to the finish, it was pretty strong. I mean, I got to give a shout out to that awesome intro, you know, Adam Page riding that horse through downtown Minneapolis and
on a bad mini screen or bad green screen, but sure.
Well, it's like you could tell that, you know, but it was almost like part of the appeal. I don't know, like it just worked. Like it was so goofy that it just worked. But I thought that was kind of funny. And I mean, they went at it from moment one, like just hardcore chop off right off the bat and, you know, very hard hitting moves to establish that this was going to be a slugfest. Like they were both going to bring everything they could. And I thought that it really did play well into the story. I mean, if you think about it, this was a 2-year build for what happened in this match, going back to Paige fighting Jericho in the very first pay-per-view for who was going to be the very first AEW champion. So they have been laying groundwork for this. Maybe one of the longest stories I've seen in wrestling in recent history, really, if you were to add it all up and sequence it out. So, but what I liked about it was that it really picked up, and as it got through kind of like that halfway point into the back end, I mean, it was just boom, 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 moves, 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 suplexes. I mean, there was so many to go through. One of my favorites of the night was Omega hit that, like, he like did like a springboard into a sunset powerbomb. That was just kind of wild when Adam Page was up on the top rope. And I mean, just one thing after another. I really liked it.
Anthony, we'll shift it over to you. As Chris pointed out, we had big move after big move, counter after counter. These two just execute so fluidly with one another. But were you happy with the back and forth?
I was very happy with the back and forth, very happy with the match. The Darby and MJF match was the match of the night until I watched this match. And I'll give a little love to the chop off in the beginning when you talk about, you know, is it checking the boxes? When I want to sit back and really enjoy a physical match, when you start that way, oh, Chris goes, hey, you got that popcorn. Don't forget your popcorn. I happily opened my bag. And I was like, this is what it's all about. So shout out to them for doing that, because that, I feel like that helps set the tone. Like, hey, we're going to go at it. We're going chop for chop first, and then, you know, we'll get ready for a war. So I love that. The power moves were fantastic. The reversals and double reversals and suplexes. I don't know what more they could possibly do to put on a better match than that. I loved it, every second of it. And I loved the ending.
Yeah, for sure, for sure. It's so good. We could sit here and we could do the play-by-play, but some of these matches, do yourself a favor, go watch it yourself. Like me sitting here telling you that it was this move into this counter and all that, it's going to get the point, but you really need to go invest, watch these matches, enjoy it, because it's too top performers executing at the top level. It's truly amazing. Anthony, you said it, coming down to the ending here, we saw Omega countering a buckshot lariat with a V-trigger, but then Page countered that into a one-wing angel of his own.
Yes.
That was really cool. Now, granted, Omega did kick out of that, so he's the first person to ever kick out of a one-wing angel.
Yes.
However, as I don't know if JR or maybe Tony or Excalibur pointed out, they didn't think that Paige's version has the right amount of oomph to it. That
wasn't quite as good.
As good, which is why Omega was able to kick out of it. But it's still a point to push out that somebody kicked out of the one-winged angel. And that's the first time we've ever seen that on AEW television. We'll see whoever gets that first kick out when Omega delivers it. But tonight was not that night. Because after that happened, the Young Bucks actually come down to the ring, and you're not sure what they're going to do. Are they going to help their fellow EVP, or are they going to get involved in any way? But they didn't. They sat back, they nodded, they gave Paige that approval to go ahead. He hits two buckshot lariats, scores the pin, and becomes AEW World Champion. Chris said it, 2 years in the making, long time coming, good for him. He's celebrating the ring, and Dark Order comes down to celebrate with him. Big hugs all around. It's cool to see somebody that has put in the work, paid his dues, and is finally at the top of the summit. Anthony, where do you see Hangman Adam Page's reign going from here?
Well, long may he reign, because, yeah, he's put in the work. The fans love him. Clearly, at least the Dark Order loves him. And, you know, he's at least got that supporting cast behind him to help maybe, you know, if things get dicey, we'll see. But, yeah, I mean, obviously we're headed towards Bryan Danielson,
yeah,
and Hangman. So that's the next thing to look forward to, and I'm salivating to watch how that goes down. I was ready for this, and I will say, everybody thought that he was going to win, and I wasn't sure. I just had to see it for myself.
Yeah.
That was the beauty of this whole pay-per-view, is that I really wasn't sure. I had to see it for myself. So I'm glad that I did, and it all played out wonderfully. I loved it.
It is. It did feel like one of those moments where, like, it can be telegraphed, you can see it coming, but until that belt is in his hand and the 1-2-3, or the 1-2-3 goes down and the belt's in his hand, you can't fully believe. Chris, are you excited? Yeah, I asked Anthony where he thought he was going to go. Definitely pointed out that Bryan Danielson is obviously up next, winning that tournament. That should be an incredible matchup. Do you think he's going to have a long reign? Do you think he's going to lose it quick?
Oh, I think he's going to lose it quick, unless Tony Khan has the balls to pull a little bit bolder move, you know, with the way that this was set up. And we actually talked about this with Mick Arcade when he was on, you know, the show just the other day, is that with that tournament happening in the background of this, as awesome as it is to see Hangman Page finally get this payoff, you know, I was happy about that. And I told Anthony early on, I was like, Page is going to win this because he's got championship quality pants on. Like, he had new attire,
yeah,
like when the match came out. You're like, you know, sometimes he's like, he got some special pants because he's going to be champ at the end of the night. But I think with Danielson right there in the shadows, it kind of signals to me that most likely we're up for the shortest reigning AEW champion that we've seen to date, with following up these three consecutive year-long runs from Jericho, Mox, and Omega.
Yeah.
I really think that we're going to get about 3 months of Adam Page here. And then when he goes up against Danielson, the obvious outcome is that Danielson's going to win. But going back to the bold move thing, I'd like this. I'd rather would actually see Tony Khan let Page beat Danielson.
Oh.
Nobody will expect it. Give Page the nod for being here from day one. And let him, you know, have at least a decent, maybe 6 month run. So I'm not hopeful that is going to happen, unfortunately, but that's where I'm at, is we already know the writing's kind of on the wall, and I'm hoping Tony has the balls to not play it out as obvious as it looks like it's going to be.
Yeah, fair point. We will see for sure. You know, you just never know, because in wrestling, you got to ride the wave. And right now, Bryan Danielson is that wave, and it sucks.
But they both are.
But in my mind, I'm thinking, okay, we're going to stick with the wave metaphor here. Page was the initial, like, he was just so hot, so hot, so hot. And it's awesome that they did this super long storytelling with him. Almost unexpectedly, Bryan Danielson came out of nowhere and is now just a bigger tsunami. So it's tough. It's tough.
It's a good problem to have, and Danielson has that effect on, like, every... I mean, the fans just love him so much, you know?
Yeah.
But he's also, like, the older guy, kind of, at this point, right?
Yeah.
You know, like, Page is the younger talent. Like, you could almost argue, like, it's Page's time, right? Like, I just have this fear that if they put the belt on Danielson, then Page is going to get obscure. Like, he's going to just wash away into the mid-card. And they're just not going to know what to do with him when you have Miro and CM Punk and just all these other guys, Malachi. I mean, go down the line.
Yeah.
You know, like, you'd almost have to push Paige back down to the bottom of that order before he could come back up and get the belt again. And I don't know. I'm interested to see where it shakes out, but I'm a little worried that Danielson wave is going to overtake Paige, and it could kind of hurt his career long term.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
Oof. I did say to Chris earlier in the night that before the match, part of the enjoyment for me is the climb to get there, not even their reign necessarily. And so we got a lot of that with Adam Page, and so I think we're all grateful for that. So if his reign is short, I think I can live with it, in the sense that he's still young. And there's places for him to go. Like, something could happen with the Dark Order. Something could happen with the Elite, with the Young Bucks. Like, there's things that he can go get some vengeance, you know, help exact revenge, help people, you know, get over a hump themselves. They helped him. Now he can help them. So, you know, I think there's places for him to go where he won't necessarily disappear. It will be, yeah, probably out of the championship picture, but that there's at least an out for him that keeps us excited to watch.
That's fair.
And then, yeah, now we get, and yeah, you take him out of the championship picture. Now we're talking about the Miros and the Brian Danielsons and the CM Punks. And what's after that? You know, Paige had to get his due and he got it. But they've planted enough seeds along the way with all these other pieces that it'll be okay. You know, and maybe 4 months from now, we're ready, you know, for that. I want to see Daniel Bryan kicking people's ass all every week, yeah. You know, so for a belt or no belt. So if we can just have him beating up guys, I'll take that.
I think that's fair, and that is kind of the difference between AEW and, like, WWE in the fact that we do have to wait a while for the next pay-per-view, and even though they've been fairly willing to have title matches on Dynamite or this and that happen, I do think that that does help a little bit, that, you know, you can almost assume, like, we're going to get probably, yeah, like, a 3 to 4 month reign at minimum, you know, I would almost hope that they don't do a Bryan Danielson versus Adam Page title fight on, like, Rampage.
Yeah.
You know, like, that needs to almost be, like, the next big pay-per-view. So I think that's fair, and I didn't really consider that until you were just saying that. But I think that kind of maybe helps things a little bit, no matter what, because it's not going to be that situation where, like, in 3 weeks we've got to go do Backlash or something, yeah, you know, yeah, and yeah. We need a title fight on the picture. Yeah. So
yeah, you could see them maybe doing... Almost a double if they had like a Blood and Guts or something like that, and they have a match there, but it ends in a dusty finish, and then they have to go to Revolution or whatever the next AEW pay-per-view is to have the true blow off.
That'd be cool with that.
That's what I'd like to see, I think.
That'd be cool.
Well, as we wrap up here, you know, we're all very excited to see where Adam Page goes in his title reign. I think Anthony already said that main event was his match of the evening. Chris, your match of the evening?
I actually ended up with this as my match of the evening, and it was mostly around the storytelling. Like, the match and the wrestling was strong, and it was good, but it was almost like nothing we hadn't seen before.
Mm-hmm.
But it was the nuances, the Kenny Omega kicking out of the One Wing Angel, the Young Bucks giving the nod and maybe setting up some potential issues between them and Omega down, you know, moving forward, and, like, those types of things. That storytelling, I thought, was really what put it all together, kind of put that icing on the cake for me. So I would give it to the main event there.
Fair point. It gets the extra little boost because it is the main event.
True. That too. Yeah. What about you, Kyle?
I'm actually not going to agree with you guys. And between entrances and match of the night, we just can't seem to line up here. Not on this one. But for me, it was the opening match.
Okay.
It was Darby Allin, MJF. I think that one just showed off for all the same reasons that the main event was the match of the night for you guys. It was great wrestling. It was great storytelling. It had all the right little pieces to it, nuances to it, especially with the way MGF won. But I think maybe if I had to put them side by side, main event would get that. So maybe if I were locked into doing ratings, I would go main event. But I'm not, so I'm going to go ahead and say MJF. Just keep that love going his way.
Totally fair. Well, directly compared to AEW's last pay-per-view event, All Out, Full Gear felt to be a little bit of a half step taken backwards. While still a decent event overall that gave fans a few highlight moments to take away, it will likely be their least memorable event of 2021. Be sure to find us on social media to share whether or not you agree and what your predictions are for the upcoming collision between Hangman Adam Page and the American Dragon, Bryan Danielson. Thanks for listening. If you enjoyed this discussion, go ahead and smash the subscribe button so you never miss a chapter of Geek Ketchup, and leave us a review on your favorite podcast platform. Also, be sure to follow GK on social media. You can find links to all of our accounts on the show notes below and on our website, geekketchuppodcast.com. There's even links to our merch store and Patreon if you'd like to support the show. But as always, remember to stay saucy, you nerds.